House Taxation Committee will please come to order. Will the secretary please call the roll?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Vice Chair Welch?
Here.
Vice Chair Thane?
Here.
Representative Abbott?
Excused.
Representative Barker?
Here.
Representative Brewster?
Here.
Representative Buckley?
Here.
Representative Butcher?
Yep.
Representative Konauer?
Present.
Representative Essman?
Here.
Representative Fern?
Here.
Representative Kazmaier?
Excused.
Representative Kearns?
Here.
Representative Knudsen?
Excused.
Representative Malone?
Here.
Representative Marler?
Excused.
Representative Miner?
Here.
Representative Niklokakos?
Here.
Representative Romano?
Here.
Representative T. Smith?
Here.
Representative Vinton?
Here.
Chair Fielder?
Here.
Mr. Chair, 17 members are present. 4 are excused.
Thank you. First announcement I'd like to make is, again, it's the beginning of the week. Make sure your cell phones are silenced or on vibrate or something like that. Ms. Moore has an announcement she'd like to also share with us.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I passed out some amendments for executive action today, and I just wanted to draw your attention to the amendment for House Bill 420. This amendment was originally drafted with an incorrect committee name on it. However, I already made copies. So if you just take your pencil and scratch out business and labor and replace it with taxation, and then also the amendment number should be 2 at the end, so 002 instead of 001. Thanks.
Okay, further announcement. Our taxation committee is going to be getting to work pretty seriously in the next 10 days. As you can see, I put on the board up there basically a schedule of what I've got so far. I think there's 13 bill hearings that we've got so far and about 21 executive actions, and we'll be adding to that. Wednesday will be our last committee meeting before we do a transmittal break. We'll also have floor sessions on Thursday and Friday morning, but our last committee to conduct finishing our business is going to be Wednesday. So we've got a full schedule there, as you can see. Some days we have five or six executive actions. We have 5 bills, you know, in one day, too. What we'll do to keep moving on schedule, we'll do the bill hearings first, and then we'll do executive actions as we schedule that. If we can't complete all the executive actions, then we'll reconvene at 5 o'clock to finish that executive action work for the day if we can't push them to the following day. But we can only push back so far before we get to that Wednesday when we have our last meeting. Revenue bills give us a little more flexibility, but we're going to be trying to finish up what we can, because after transmittal break, we're going to start getting all the Senate bills, too. So bills are being dumped in quickly. Again, I want to make sure that every bill gets a fair hearing and every committee member gets a fair chance to ask questions so that they understand the bills thoroughly. But we've got a big load ahead of us. That's why we're starting at 8 o'clock now. I'm hoping we don't have to meet on Monday, but that'll depend on how much we get done this week and how many other bills are dropped onto us between now and the end of this week. So with that, we've got 3 bills we're going to hear today, and those are House Bill 476, 481, and 530. If you are going to speak on a bill, I hope you signed up outside, and when you step to the lectern to testify, please state your name, especially your last name, clearly, and spell your last name for the record. Everything that happens in this committee between the opening gavel and the closing gavel is being recorded, and the public are watching, and it's part of the public record. With that, we'll move towards HB 476. Would you read the title of the bill, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 476, provide for property tax exemption for certain residential property.
Representative Galloway, please open on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good Taxation Committee. I am Representative Stephen Galloway. That's G-A-L-L-O-W-A-Y. I proudly represent House District 24 and feel blessed to have the opportunity to serve. Today I bring you House Bill 470. It's a bill that came to the session last time under 690 that my lovely wife, luckily she's not here, tabled. We knew it wasn't going anywhere. But we felt it has merit, and I'm bringing it back to you this time under House Bill 476. Why do I bring this bill? I wore my red shirt and red tie today because I think a lot of households are getting into the red, and property taxes are getting to be a burden. What we've structured here is a bill that has some requirements. Property taxes, you know, has to have a reappraisal on residential class four every cycle. It used to be six, now we're doing every two. The problem with that is that we're seeing a house sell for twice what it might be worth. A house being built mega size next to your average home. And guess what? You get to pay more on your house whether you did anything to it or not. So I think that's becoming burdensome for some people. This is just an avenue that if the committee likes this and wants to work with it, I think there's some merit. I've had plenty of people like the idea. Even the department had concerns with how much the prices have inflated since the last cycle. So I have the basic bill, and they came to me with some suggestions that we went ahead and drafted. So you should have a draft copy there of an amendment 0101. It's going to define, I guess first I should go through the basics. Like I say, it's on only on residential properties. There's going to be some points that it has to be. After the reappraisal's done, because that's in the Constitution, all the properties have to be reappraised equally. Afterwards, you'd be able to go in and apply for a freeze. Now, in my mind, the county already knows that house was at this level. All the ones that don't get this get to keep going up. But if it's your primary residence, you live there at least 7 months of the year, then you would be able to go in and apply for this. So now, the department came in and said, well, we really don't want to be hassling with this every cycle. So we went in and amended that once you've established this, and if not, then the criteria changes, you will just continue on. Now, that also put in there that you could sell it to your direct descendants or relative, and it would continue on. But if you add an addition on, you do something that triggers a reappraisal or value change, and you've done something. You know, we've put a few sideboards on what that would be so that, you know, maintenance isn't going to trigger it. Just some of those basic things that you have to do to keep your property up. But if not, it would just continue on. But again, the biggest points are, is it a primary residence? So to me, that helps us out with a lot of these folks that have multiple homes or they're using it for business purposes. Those are still going to get reassessed and go up. Now I got a huge fiscal note, but I argue that there really isn't any cost in this because we're just making the counties or the state use the value that was existing. So they're still going to tax that property. They're just not getting that increase. And a lot of times these increases seem to me to be very unfair. So with that opening, I think I'll just let opponents and proponents share with you their feelings, and then I reserve the right to close.
Thank you, Representative Galloway. Do we have proponents for House Bill 476? Do we have any proponents in the room?
Good morning, Chair Fielder, members of the committee. My name is Lisa Bennett, B-E-N-N-E-T-T. I'm from Carbon County. I'm a proponent of this bill. I know several people in our county that are suffering right now and considering whether they're going to have to be forced to move out of our county. We have Red Lodge, which is a resort community for Billings. A lot of people from Billings and elsewhere around the country come into our community to buy property. I canvassed, and about one out of four of our homes, including apartments, are non-residents, people from Billings that come to rent or buy so that they can have a weekend getaway. As a result of the increased property values, a lot of these people that I know that are on fixed income, Social Security, to couple that with the next bill on inflation, they can't afford to live there any longer, even though they've been there either their entire lives or 30, 40 years. And to have them move at their age in their 70s and 80s because of property tax valuations is very difficult for them. So I would suggest that this bill move forward. If there are any other parameters you want to add to make sure that it's not being abused, I'm in favor of that. But I think as the bill stands, it should move forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Other proponents for the bill in the room? Other proponents? Do we have proponents online?
Not at this time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Do we have opponents in the room on House Bill 476?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Sam Sill. It's S-I-L-O. Here on behalf of the Montana Association of Realtors, and I want to acknowledge from the get-go that our association is as concerned about the property tax burden as anyone is. You know, the cost of services at the local level is ever increasing. Values are going up, and we, you know, wholeheartedly acknowledge that we've got a problem with an over-reliance on property taxes in Montana and that it is, you know, absolutely burdensome. You know, with that said, this isn't a solution that we're going to be able to support. And I think that couple big things, you know, first of all, while this does benefit some taxpayers that don't leave their home, you know, ultimately what is going to happen for every all other classes of property is they're going to have to pay more. Commercial, ag, and any residential property taxpayer that isn't subject to the exemption in this bill, they're all going to pay more. And I would submit to you that the property tax burden on Class 4 commercial, for example, is pretty heavy now, and this is only going to make it worse. Something else that's concerning about this bill is that it creates an incentive for homeowners not to transfer properties or sell properties to non-family members. So what that's going to mean is fewer listings on the market at a time where there's already too few homes for sale is what it is. It creates a bad incentive along those lines. You know, to some extent, if you are someone who needs a bigger home because your family's growing, or you need to downsize because you're getting older, or maybe you need to move for a job and you need to sell your home and move into another, buy another one, you're not going to benefit from this at all. And that strikes me as being a little bit unfair. I think something else to keep in mind is that there doesn't appear to be any sort of an increase allowed on valuations after the first freeze. So that's going to amplify the effects of this bill probably to a greater extent even than what we predicted we might see with CI-121, the failed ballot initiative from this summer that, you know, I should note was not dissimilar to this, and voters, you know, pretty roundly rejected that one, at least to the extent that they denied it ballot access through signature collection. But I think I'll leave it there for now. And again, I do not mean in any way to downplay the property tax burden and our over reliance on property taxes, but we can't support this solution. Thank you.
Thank you. Next opponent.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dave Galt. That's G-A-L-T, no U. And I'm here representing the Montana Chamber. I very much appreciate the effort and the concern shared by Representative Galloway expressed in this bill, and I know personally what each of you heard as you walked around and talked to the voters in your districts. But the Chamber shares the concern of the Montana Realtors, particularly with the issue of tax shift, and we're standing there for an opposition. Thank you.
Thank you. Other opponents in the room?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Daryl James, that's D-A-R-R-Y-L. James is the common spelling, and I'm the executive director for the Montana Infrastructure Coalition. We've heard the same complaints that you've heard, and I appreciate the sponsor bringing the bill to just continue to raise attention about property tax fatigue in Montana. But I think what we've heard in this committee already this session are some incremental changes that would try to protect those most vulnerable to those increases. You've considered PTAP, you've considered abatements for disabled veterans, low-income population. So I think you've made some measured steps to try to address those that are most vulnerable and at risk of losing their homes. We've also talked about the property tax shift that comes with those. And those have been in the couple million dollars to $15 million shifts. Collectively, we're probably going to impose some tax shift this session. And that's probably okay because those are good policies. They make sense. But if we go with the old analogy, imagine, a good representative from Great Falls standing on his headboard and doing a cannonball onto a waterbed. This, according to the fiscal note, this results in a $2 billion shockwave to the remaining taxpayers. That's a heck of a tax shift. So for that reason alone, I think you ought to take a good hard look at this and ask if that's the right response. I think that we can, as you have done, we've talked about relieving pressure, applying pressure to that waterbed to make sure that everybody's balanced out. But this is a pretty heavy hit. So we'd ask for your do not pass. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Other opponents in the room? Other opponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jennifer Hensley, H-E-N, S as in Sam, L-E-Y, know you. Jennifer spelled traditionally. I just couldn't help it. Good morning, it's going to be a busy day. I stand this morning on behalf of the County of Missoula, and I echo the previous opponent's concerns about tax shift. I do want to thank the sponsor for sparking this conversation because I think it's an important one to have, and I'm never going to throw stones at somebody trying to find solutions to the problem. With the chair's permission, I do have a handout.
Okay, you may hand that out, please.
Yes.
Hand it down both sides of the aisle.
Yes, sir. Let me know if I got them lopsided, guys, but I think we're okay. So what I'm handing out right now is just, now it's on both sides, okay? So this is the percentage increase in property tax revenue by tax code class between bienniums just in the County of Missoula, okay? You're going to see three lines, blue, yellow, and red. And you'll see how blue increases pretty regularly. Yellow is class 9, 12, and 13 centrally assessed properties combined, and class B is business personal property. On the other side, you're going to see the percent increase in total property tax revenue by tax code class between legislative bienniums. So this is the increase in the revenue. So this isn't the actual flat score, but it's how much it increased or decreased, kind of like when health insurers say they're going to lower your premium and it actually just doesn't lower it. It just doesn't increase as much. This is what you're seeing here. I handed these out to give some general education and background, because at the county level, 97% roughly of their income comes from property taxes. Okay? So, of course, here at the state, we've got property, income, state special revenue, a lot of different sources feeding into the pie. At the county, it's one homogenous pie. It's like pumpkin. I have no analogy for what you have at this state. I apologize, too early for pie. So I want you to remember that if we shift the balance away from one type of homeowner or one class of property in general, someone else is absolutely going to have to pay that if you want to keep your sewers running and 911 being answered and your sheriff's office being operated responsibly and public safety being cared for and your elections run efficiently, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Because of those reasons, we respectfully ask a do not pass on this bill. Thanks.
Thank you. Other opponents to the bill?
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Rachel Cohn, C-O-N-E, C-O-N-E, excuse me, and I'm here on behalf of the Montana Farm Bureau Federation. We also rise in opposition to House Bill 476, and we do thank the sponsor for bringing this. Like you've heard opponents before me, we do empathize with the property tax issues being faced by many in the state. But reducing one class of property taxes, and then shifting that burden to others will eventually cost the state millions and more as the years go on, as shown in the fiscal note. Again, you've heard a lot of this before, so I don't want to be repetitive, but I think it's important to note that property taxes do fund the local services, like schools or local law enforcement. And then this drastic cut will cause other classes of property to have an additional tax burden. Our members are landowners. They pay a great deal on property taxes, and they would face a lot of the consequences by shifting that burden for agricultural class. Or it will also force local communities to have to choose to cut some of the funding for those local programs. We think that this bill will offer many consequences and really just isn't the option to solve this problem. Again, we do thank the sponsor for trying to find solutions, and we're happy to continue working on that, but we just don't think this is the option. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Other opponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Kelly Lynch, YNCH. I'm the executive director of Montana League of Cities and Towns. There are a lot of myths surrounding property taxes, and we appreciate the sponsor keeping this on the front burner. We want to be at the table to figure out a solution to these issues. For all the reasons stated, we too stand in opposition to the bill, but I wanted to just point out again that we cannot increase our assessed taxes more than half the rate of inflation over the previous 3 years average. Everything else from the local perspective is voted mill levies. So, and once again, cities are about 15% of your total property tax value. Schools make up the vast majority of that. So with that, we stand in opposition to the bill. Thanks.
Thank you. Do we have other opponents in the room? Seeing none, do we have opponents online?
Not at this time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Do we have informational witnesses in the room?
Chair Fielder, members of the committee, Bryce Kautz, that's K-A-A-T-Z, I'm a bureau chief with the Property Assessment Division, available for questions.
Thank you. Other informational witnesses.
Chair Fielder and House Tax Committee, good morning. Dylan Cole, C-O-L-E, with the Department of Revenue. I did the calculations for the fiscal note and happy to answer questions you have about those.
Thank you. Other informational witnesses in the room? Seeing none, do we have informational witnesses online?
Not at this time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Do we have questions from the committee concerning House Bill 476? Representative Malone.
Mr. Chair, a question for Mr. Seal. Mr. Chair, Mr. Seal, would the... What's a typical family, how long do they live in a house?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, you know, that's a good question. I've seen a variety of statistics over the years, you know, anywhere 3 to 7 years, but it depends, in short.
So, follow up, Mr. Chair?
Follow up.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Sill, so... It might be a suffering for a while, but it would average out over the years because every 7 years it would be a big bump.
Well, I mean, Mr. Chairman, Representative, maybe I don't understand the question, but I mean, it doesn't all happen at once, right? I mean, you're going to have, you know, a certain amount of the population every cycle.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions from the committee? Representative Vice Chair Thane.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for the sponsor, please.
Mr. Chair, Representative Thane.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Galloway. First, I again appreciate you bringing this forward. I think this is a huge issue, and we need to be thinking outside the box. So thank you for stimulating the dialogue. somewhat as a follow-up to Representative Malone, I've been in my house 31 years, and there's a house substantially similar down the block. So if we play this out for a number of years, say my property tax has been frozen, but over those 30 years, the other property continues to be reappraised. And in this cycle alone, we're looking probably at a 40% or more reappraised value. So if, in fact, my tax burden is, say, $2,000 a year and somebody moves in next door and they're paying $5,000 or $6,000 a year based on that appraisal, how do we reconcile that in terms of the issue of tax fairness, Mr. Chair?
Well, I won't say this is a perfect solution, but I do think it addresses the fact that you've been living in your home. If you did anything to your home, it's going to get bumped up. But if you haven't, you don't get caught up in this sweep of people paying twice what a house is worth, building a mansion next to your normal home. I mean, do you feel it's fair that you get caught up in that reappraisal and pay more when you haven't done anything? This bill, I feel, only addresses a small percentage of folks. It's only going to apply to a few. I won't qualify for this. It won't do me any good at all. But I do think homes, on average, I think you're an anomaly. Living in a home for 31 years, that's not the national trend, I don't believe. I think the last statistic I heard was about 7 years. But I couldn't probably produce that for you. But does that answer your question?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Rep. Galloway.
Other questions from the committee? Seeing none, would the sponsor like to close on his bill?
Thank you, committee and chairman. I appreciate the hearing. Just to address a couple things, darn, it's not going to be fair for those realtors to get those commissions. You know, the chamber's saying tax shift. Well, my viewpoint's different on this because that it's not like these houses aren't still paying taxes. They're still at that level. So maybe we just have to start learning to live within our means. And somebody said something about doing something on a waterbed and $2 billion. I don't know where that's coming from. Even the fiscal note says into the third year it's only costing $13 million, which I don't agree with at all. I don't think it costs us anything. We're just not going to take that step up on those properties. They're still going to be paying at that old level. You know, it's just a matter, where do we find a solution that helps folks that haven't done anything to their home, that might be just getting by? It's their primary residence. But this also helps us capture probably more, which some of Vegas thinks is unfair back here, that this folks that maybe from out of state have a second home or from a city has another second home in another town, they're going to pay a little more. I don't think that's unfair. The rate of inflation was brought up. So there's a cap there anyway. And maybe this is just a starting point. You know, today I brought you a bill. Now it's yours. You know, the department came in with some things to improve this, put some sideboards on it to what triggers, you know, some of the reasons for that freeze to not work. They also made it easier that you don't have to keep reapplying. Maybe you guys can put your heads together and improve on what I've brought you. I mean, it's far from perfect, but I do think it really gets to several points, is that we have folks that haven't done a thing to their home, that probably are just getting by on fixed incomes, that this address. You know, and the folks that are coming in here oftentimes paying more or building a monstrosity next to an average home, where's the balance in that? So I think, you know, it's a two-sided coin. You've got to flip it. You got to debate it. You got to decide what's best for our state. I think it has merit that it needs to be given some attention and the possibility that, you know, maybe you have to
sunset it. Let's try it for two or three cycles. Those are just suggestions. But at this point, it's your bill. Appreciate your consideration. And I do ask for a due pass on House Bill 476. Thank you.
This closes the hearing on House Bill 476. We will move on to a hearing on House Bill 481.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 481, increased rate of inflation limit for calculating property tax levies.
Representative Fitzgerald, would you like to open on your bill, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I certainly will. And committee, my name is Ross Fitzgerald, F-I-T-Z-G-E-R-A-L-D, House District 17, Pendre Teton, and a little chunk of Lewis and Clark County. Mr. Chair, House Bill 481 has come to my attention over the last, the topic itself is over the last three sessions, and it kind of stems from all the rural counties that I looked over. I'm guessing there's probably around 44 counties that haven't received or experienced the population growth and the expansion of building and whatnot. And what they're experiencing is a very tough difficulty in keeping up with just operations in the county itself. And now with our rather extraordinary inflation rate over the last year or two, they find themselves even deeper in a dilemma in terms of basic operations, whether it's fuel or repairs, etc. This doesn't reflect anything on the special levies that they've been approved by the voters. This is strictly the formula that actually operates the county as a foundation. What this does is increase the rate of inflation limit from one half the average rate of inflation to the average rate, so that you don't have that division. You'll get an actual 3 years calculation rather than half of the 3 years calculation of inflation. So the folks can, I will make sure I mention that this is a more of a permissive thing. It's not necessarily a mandatory thing. I don't like mandatory taxes like anybody else, but when we have these short-term crises that we're experiencing now across the rural counties, that's my emphasis at this point. And to do that, of course, they have to pass a resolution reflecting that. So there is a procedure and a process, and I do have that process and procedure under 1510.420 here if the committee would like to have copies of that as well. So with that, Mr. Chairman, committee members, I would beseech you to take a look at that. I don't have numbers in terms of my own county to see what that would actually experience in revenue increases to cover basic costs, but it does give them the flexibility to be able to have a budget that actually works and performs for the services of the constituents of those counties that are, in fact, not growing and somewhat flat and have to still maintain the basic services for their constituents, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Do we have proponents for House Bill 481?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Mike McGinley. It's MC, capital G-I-N-L-E-Y. I'm a commissioner out of Beaverhead County and currently MACO's fiscal officer. I certainly appreciate Representative Fitzgerald bringing this bill. It's been one on my mind for the last 20 years as being a commissioner of just the sheer mathematics that if you spend $2 every year and your revenue only goes up by one, pretty soon you're going to run out of money. A lot of times in Beaverhead County in particular, being one of the small rural counties without a lot of real big growth, just in our budget thing, on our county portion, they talked about the pumpkin of where it is. County taxes is right about 30% of the whole property tax bill. So in Beaverhead County's list last year, bring in, or our budget is $12 million. The property tax portion of that is 36% of that. You've heard some numbers that property tax runs all of this. But that's what's happened to the last 20 years of this thing. If we've got to find other ways to get money. Here the last few years, Beaverhead County, big public land county, a lot of our revenue comes from the PILT payments, comes from SRS, refuge revenue sharing payments. That's how we do it. The other portion is what we, I think, responsible counties do is that reserve money we have in the bank to start the next year. So those are the components put together. I really appreciate you guys. I fully understand what they're talking about in this property tax situation, but that is the what we survive on, and I do honestly believe that the bigger share of the county commissioners are responsible for what they have. I appreciate Representative bringing this forward. I appreciate all you're doing here for the service of the state of Montana trying to fix or solve this property tax bill. So on this one, I definitely appreciate a yes vote. Thank you.
Thank you. Other proponents?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jason Strouf, S-T-R-O-U-F as in Frank. I stand in front of you as a proponent for this bill, and I too want to thank the sponsor for bringing this forward. I will tell you really quickly that Custer County in southeastern Montana, which is where I'm a commissioner from, is a mirror image of what Commissioner McGinley just described to you. What I will add, though, is this bill is an optional. It's not mandatory. This is a tool that could go into the toolbox for local government and give them the flexibility to implement this if they feel that their tax base and their constituents want to have this done and will absorb this. And again, our costs go up just like the public sector does, so we've got to find a way to move with that as well as a way to ease the burden on the property tax, because we are very resilient on property tax in our functions. So thank you.
Thank you. Next proponent.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Shane Gorder. Gorder, G-O-R, D as in dog, E-R. I'm a county commissioner from Richland County. I'm also the MACO past president. This is a good bill, like you heard. It's an opportunity for us and our taxpayers in our counties to have a tool in a toolbox. It gives the option. This is a good bill. I think I need to thank the representative for bringing this forward, so I would like to see a due pass on House Bill 481. Thank you.
Thank you. Next proponent.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Todd Devlin, D-E-V-L-I-N, Todd with two Ds. In Prairie County, we're a very rural county, about 1,100 people. We have to give raises to retain employees. And what we're doing right now in our default is average of 7 years COLA plus one. So basically we're giving our employees 1% increase in salary every year in real dollars. Where do we get that money now? Because of half the rate of inflation, average of 3 years, that's what we get for an increase in taxes. We get it from the other line items that are tools in the bag for them to provide the service that their constituents expect. And we're taking more and more of those tools out of the bag in other line items in their budget. So pretty quick, they're not going to have any tools, and there's no reason to have the employees. Please support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Other proponents?
Morning again, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Daryl James, that's D-A-R-R-Y-L. James is the common spelling. I'm the executive director for the Montana Infrastructure Coalition. I think you have to look back to the origin of 1510-420 and this artificial half the rate of inflation cap. That came out of the big bill in 1999 and recognized that you simply can't keep up with the rising cost of labor and materials if you're only growing at half the rate of the inflation of those other costs. So there were other tools provided. Voted mills and levies, You get the value of new development and increased value in homes. That was the intent of at least allowing you to get to the rate of inflation, to keep up with the growing costs of providing those services and facilities. There's been, over the last several sessions, an onslaught of opposition from the legislature in saying, local governments, you're working around the restrictions we put on you. Why are you using these voted levies? It's like, well, that's the only way you can keep up. So if the desire is to take away those tools that put things in front of the voters to ask them what they want, then this is probably the right solution, to say let's at least allow local governments to keep up with the rate of inflation, the growing cost of the labor and materials that allow you to put those services and facilities in place. It's a sensible solution. You can do what you want at that point with raising the bar for those voted levies, but at least allow local governments to continue to provide those basic services and facilities that your constituents are asking for at the local level. So we encourage you to pass on this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Next proponent.
Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Shelby DeMars, that's D-E-M-A-R-S, here today on behalf of two groups. One is the Montana Association of Oil, Gas, and Coal Counties. The second is the Montana Police Protective Association. On behalf of the Montana Oil and Gas Counties, many of our members are those very rural counties, and in order to keep up with the just vastly increasing costs, like others have mentioned, having that cap is extremely prohibitive. On kind of a different view from the MPPA's perspective, a lot of our members go into contract negotiations every year, and in order to continue to ask for wage increases so that they can hire officers for their local municipalities, they need to keep up with not only inflation, but also be able to keep up and be competitive with other departments across the state. The cap in 1510-420 that currently exists is, again, extremely prohibitive in their ability to do that, and that's why you see a lot of the other voted levies that get passed. A lot of those are public safety levies, and so we would really encourage your support of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Other proponents in the room?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Kelly Lynch, L-Y-N-C-H. I'm the executive director of the Montana League of Cities and Towns. I'm not going to repeat what everyone has said, and particularly the commissioners who you can hear from directly. I just wanted to point out a couple of things, and you can do this for any community that you want to see. On the Department of Administration website under local government services, you can pull up the budget for every single local government in Montana. That includes special districts if they're separate entities. And you can look at their worksheets for how they determine what property taxes they are going to assess for the next year. And I know some of the previous speakers have explained that, but I'll give you an example of the city of Boulder. Boulder's total assessed taxes in the prior year were $216,000. And then they add on $3,841, that's 1.77%. That's the calculation for the half rate of inflation over the previous 3 years average. We get that from Department of Revenue about every May. And so the total is $221,000. Then they basically take the total taxable value for the district, which is the city of Boulder, and spread that cost into mills. And that's how you determine what the mills are. And so I just thought that might be helpful to show you the way that we calculate how we come up with the amounts. You can see those amounts for every community in your district. Pull those up on Department of Administration. And then the only other one I would talk about would be Great Falls, their taxes. So that same calculation for 2022, in the fiscal year 2023 adopted budget came out to $27 million out of $126 million budget. Only $27 million are those general fund taxes that come through that calculation. So I just wanted to clarify some of the myths around how property taxes work at the local level. We stand in strong support of this. I think the previous testifiers have explained why this would be a much clearer way to allow local government budgeting to occur. And we ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Other proponents in the room? Do we have any proponents online?
Not at this time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Do we have opponents in the room? Any opponents in the room? Seeing none, do we have opponents online?
Not at this time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Do we have informational witnesses in the room? Any informational witnesses? Seeing none. Do we have informational witnesses online?
Not at this time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Do we have questions from the committee regarding House Bill 481? Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for the bill sponsor, please.
Mr. Chair, Representative T. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Fitzgerald, or Representative, when they passed the big bill, it was trying to limit local governments overtaxing people. How would you feel maybe if there was an amendment on this to help out the small counties by population? Because your bigger counties are going to take advantage of this and max out the rate of inflation. If you had something maybe countywide, where there's 30,000 people countywide to help out Prairie County and some of these counties that are struggling, but that would also carve out that the big counties couldn't, take advantage of this and misuse it and grow local government.
Mr. Chairman, Representative T. Smith, I understand your position of picking winners and losers, and I certainly have those concerns. But my issue is not restricting the big cities. Hopefully they have some common sense not to extend their taxes to the extent that they could, but I'm more concentrating on the rural counties, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Kearns.
Mr. Chair, question for the sponsor.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kearns.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I also sit on local government, and it's interesting that we hear continually where there's a number of counties that are kind of going out of control. I noticed that when we talk about Great Falls is not one of them, but some of the Missoula ones, Missoula, Billings, some of these are just absolutely going out of control with those higher population. And we continually hear, we need to do something about this. And this would, in theory, make it more flexible for those bigger cities to do that. I guess my question comes down to how do we... if we're just leaving it to responsibility, how do we put any kind of do you see any kind of sideboards on this?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kearns, should you and Representative Smith come up with some reasonable sideboards without discrimination, certainly would consider that, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Fern.
Mr. Chair, committee members, just as a point of order, I can say, living in a large county, that our commissioners are very conservative, and I wouldn't say we're out of control, just to kind of put some perspective on that. Not all large counties are the same, Mr. Chair.
So noted. Thank you. Representative Marler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe that my county was the only one called out, and I take exception to the comment that our voters don't have enough sense to do the right thing. Thanks.
So noted also. We have other questions from the committee. Representative Malone, what is your question?
I do have a question. Mr. Chair, for the sponsor.
Mr. Chair, Representative Malone.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fitzgerald. I never figured this out, or never thought about this, but what is a government entity besides commissions?
Mr. Chair, Representative Malone, it's my impression that the government entity could be sewer and water districts, could be any districts approved by the county, but this doesn't apply to those districts. This intent is strictly for county governments, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, yep. Mr. Chair.
Representative Fern.
Thank you. Stay up there. Good sponsor. Mr. Chair, good Representative Fitzgerald. So the description of fiscal impact on the note says HB 481 would allow governmental entities. Would that not include municipalities as well?
Mr. Chair, Representative Fern, between you and Representative Malone, I think you got a point there. Let me mull that over and see if we can't narrow down that to a definition, because I don't think there's a definition in the bill itself. Let me look here.
I could read direct to a city person if that would be better.
That would be acceptable.
May I do that, please?
You may redirect.
May I redirect to Ms. Lynch? And just to repeat, my question is, started off, I think, with Rep. Malone looking at what entities are, and mine is reading from the fiscal note, assuming that we've heard over the years that 15-10-420 really affects counties and municipalities, so are we not talking about counties and municipalities? That's the question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fern, yes. Is this a trick question?
From 1 to 10, number 10 would be yes. No, it's not a quick question. It just seemed obvious, but we didn't know, so thank you.
Thank you. No other questions from the committee? Vice Chair Thane.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I beg your indulgence. I'm a little slow, but on a point of order regarding the previous comments, after the local government hearing, I sought out some information on the total mill levies as well as the total amount of special district assessments in six of Montana's largest communities converted to mills so that we could actually do an apples-to-apples comparison. So in Billings, the total mills assessed would be 326, in Bozeman, 307, in Great Falls, 315, in Helena, 309, in Kalispell, 339, and in Missoula, 306. So there's a lot of parity among our larger communities, and I would suggest that they're all subject to the same pressures the smaller entities are in terms of wage inflation, et cetera, as they contemplate their budgets. Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Other questions from the committee? Questions from the committee? Seeing none. Representative Fitzgerald, would you like to close on your bill?
Certainly would, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Just kind of going back on the 7-6-40-20 on those sections, and it refers to counties specifically from what I read under that particular statute and code regarding procedure for budgets, et cetera, et cetera. And then the formula for those calculations of the inflation factor for taxation is in 15-10-420. So that was my inference, even though the definition by Ms. Kelly was correct. I refer you to that interconnection here in the bill itself, referring to county procedure, county budgets, and then the calculation thereof, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I would ask for a due pass, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Fitzgerald. This closes the hearing on House Bill 481. We will move on to House Bill 530. Please read the title of the bill.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 530, Revised Port Authority Mill Levies. Mr. Chair.
Representative Brockman, would you like to open on your bill, please?
Mr. Chair and members of the House Taxation Committee, I am Tony Brockman.
For the record, Brockman is spelled B-R-O-C-K-M-A-N, and I represent House District 9, which is North Kalispell and the community of Evergreen. I would like to note at the beginning that I serve on Flathead County's Port Authority, which is how I was made aware of this concern and remedy that I will be presenting to you today. I bring before you today House Bill 530, which addresses the municipal tax levy of port authorities. While every county has the ability to establish port authorities, I believe that there's only a dozen or less around the state. House Bill 530 is a simple bill. It seeks to change the word may to shall. By changing the language from may levy to shall levy, House Bill 530 clarifies the intent of the original legislation, making it clear that port authorities are assured the funding from local governments who helped establish them in the beginning, and therefore should help fund the port authorities' operations, and living up to the original deal made upon the creation of the port authority. The use of the word may in the current language creates ambiguity as to whether or not the governing body has the discretion to levy the original tax. The original MCA text specified 2 mills. The language was later changed and now doesn't specify any mill amount. House Bill 530 doesn't seek any of those mills back. It just simply ensures that the original mills that the local governments agreed to are provided to the port authorities and actually get to the port authorities. Allowing local governments to choose whether or not to levy mills for port authorities that they established results in unequal funding and hinders port authorities' ability to operate effectively. House Bill 530 ensures that local governments levy the mills requested and will simplify the budgeting process for the port authorities, as the port authorities will know exactly how much they can expect in funding every year. Port authorities play a critical role in a host of different county functions, including economic development. Ensuring stable and predictable funding is essential for port authorities' success. Ensuring local governments levy the amount of mills requested allows port authorities to assist their counties in a variety of functions. And with that, Mr. Chair, I will sit down for opponents, proponents, informational witnesses, and questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Brockman. Do we have proponents in the room? Seeing none. Do we have any proponents online for House Bill 530?
Not at this time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Do we have opponents for House Bill 530? Seeing none. Do we have any opponents online?
Not at this time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Do we have any informational witnesses in the room for House Bill 530? Again, seeing none. Do we have any informational witnesses online?
Not at this time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Do we have any questions from the committee regarding House Bill 530? Representative Fern? Did you have your hand up first?
Yeah.
I thought so.
Fern?
Well?
Well, obviously, thank you, Mr. Chair. Obviously, it's for the opponent. Maybe this is the question everyone wants to ask, is what is a port authority?
Port authorities are quasi-governmental entities that kind of act as nonprofits, but also have governing authority. Like I said, there are several port authorities throughout the state. Butte has one geared towards transportation. Shelby has one that's kind of a rail park situation. Flathead County's port authority is the economic development arm for the county. So each port authority gets to decide what it wants to be when it grows up. But yeah, and that's those are agreements worked out with the county entity or the county governments to serve a purpose that better improves some function for the county.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, good sponsor. So would a port authority, such as the communities you've mentioned, would they have like a paid staff person managing it, or how is it staffed?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Fern, again, those are agreements, those are details worked out in the agreements. Buttes, I believe, received some funding from their county government and has, I don't know if their staff are a part of county government. Shelby's, I believe, is, but I need to confirm that before I give you a solid answer on that. Whereas Flathead County's gives their, another organization runs their Port Authority operations. So it's not, those individuals are not county employees. But again, it depends on the structure of the original deal.
Representative Fitton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question for the sponsor. Mr. Chairman and Representative Brockman, I was just curious also, do you know how many port authorities there are statewide? I know you said several.
Let me count on one hand. Lewistown has one. Mr. Chair, Majority Leader Vinton, there are, I believe, 8 to 10, but I will get back to you on that.
I was just curious. Thank you very much.
And they're, again, they are they're in large communities and small communities. Like I, you know, most note, Shelby has one. There are several across the state, so it's not just large communities.
Representative Marler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Brockman, could you give? I'm still trying to imagine the daily operations at a port authority, and I was wondering if you could give specific examples of the types of operations and things that they do. And then I have a quick follow-up.
Sure. Chair Fielder, Representative Marler. Again, they vary from community to community. Buttes promotes the transportation needs. Of course, Butte is at the intersection of I-90 and I-15. And they, you know, help move things, both rail and trucks. Shelby's controls their rail park. Of course, moving things across the High Line and to various communities, product to various communities. Whereas Flathead's is an economic development port authority where we help recruit and retain businesses and do various functions as well. So it goes back to whatever the county doesn't necessarily want to take in-house but knows that it needs to help fund as a part of that county's success.
Follow-up. Mr. Chair, Representative Brockman, as my follow-up is, are the duties defined in statute? And the reason I'm asking is because you are showing that port authorities can do a lot of different things. And I'm concerned if this municipal tax levy says that the port authority asks for money and then it shall, not may, but shall be levied. Like, could a county just offload something into the port authority and then the port authority says, well, now we're asking for this money and you shall appropriate it? I'm just trying to understand how the whole thing works.
Can you rephrase your question? I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, Representative Marler, would you say more?
I will say more. I will ask more. Mr. Chair, Representative Brockman, my question is two parts. One, because you're describing a lot of different things that port authorities do, I'm wondering if there's a definition in statute. The second part of my question is this setting up an uncomfortable situation for local taxpayers if we're passing a bill that says if the Port Authority asks for money, then it shall be levied by the local government?
Mr. Chair, Representative Marler, port authorities aren't asking for any more money than what was originally agreed upon in the establishing documents. So I think that the counties need to keep their obligations in mind. And again, we're not asking for any more money than what was originally agreed upon in those establishing documents.
Just a follow-up, Mr. Chair, Representative Brockman, maybe you could direct us to the establishing documents.
Well, I can provide examples, but I will have to provide the committee that at a later, I'll have to follow up with you on that. Again, each port authority, while they have under MCA have the ability to establish port authorities, counties have the ability to establish port authorities, what those documents look like differ from community to community. I can show you, I can probably get a hold of Flathead counties, but again, that's one out of perhaps 10 or a dozen. But I will get you the language in the statute as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Butcher, what is your question? You waive it? Okay. Representative Kearns.
Mr. Chair, Representative Brockman, I am still confused, I guess, on how currently, as we have these port authorities, how it is broken as it is. Can you describe that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kearns, I wouldn't say broken. It needs to be improved upon. And one of the things is a lot of counties have, especially with rising costs in various areas like healthcare, those counties have taken the money intended for port authorities to put towards other costs.
Mr. Chair, follow-up.
Follow-up.
Mr. Chair, Representative Brockman.
Yeah.
So I guess
good thing.
Here the municipality is making a decision, and it would seem that the port authority is kind of saying, well, hey, we need money too, and this is, it seems, going against it, and the local decision making and the municipality's decision to be able to do that. Am I lost here, or can you explain how my thought process is maybe flawed? Help me. I don't know.
What is the question?
Aren't we going against local control by changing this to a shall?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kearns, I think what we're doing here is, my intent is just to make sure that local governments live up to their original agreements.
Okay. Representative Brewster, did you have a question?
No, it's confusing enough. I'm okay.
Thank you. Vice Chair Thane.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Brockman, really two questions. Number one, is it the county commissioners that authorize the creation of a port authority? And then number two, if in fact it's fulfilled its mission, is it the county commissioners who would then dissolve a port authority? Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, Representative Thane, yes, county commissioners establish port authorities, and county commissioners, I would imagine, have the ability to dissolve a port authority. There was a second question in there. Would you mind reiterating it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Brockman, that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. I think you answered both questions. Representative Brewster, Butcher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative. It appears what we're really talking about, I want to just kind of capsulize this, is that if at some point in time the local city and county that formed this, if it was two entities,
which in our, in Fergus County's case is there, if they decide that it's irrelevant and they don't fund it, apparently it kind of goes away. It must not be anything relevant that they want. And I guess I'm kind of following with Thane and Representative Thane and some of the others have said, is it appears that this may be a solution looking for a problem. Is that more really what we're dealing with here?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butcher, I never pose solutions looking for problems. Back to Representative Thane's concern, some port authorities have ongoing missions. Yes, some are established for one problem, but some have ongoing missions. And we just want to make sure that they are appropriately funded.
Thank you. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Brockman, super simple question. This will be a yes or no question. Will this raise the taxes in Flathead County?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, no.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions from the committee? Representative Brockman, would you like to change another word in your bill? That was a one-word change, so thank you for a good hearing on that. And would you like to close on your bill?
Mr. Chair, members of the House Taxation Committee, thank you. I've made some notes. I will follow up and get the answers that I could not provide you today. Great hearing, and apparently we need to do more work in educating our representatives on what port authorities and what other tools the state has. So I will do my best to follow up with you on with a document about what port authorities are, how they're established, and provide some other governing documents there. So as much as I can request there, I would humbly request that you don't take executive action until I provide these follow-up documents, if you don't mind. And with that, thank you for the good hearing. This is my first time in taxation, and I ask for a due pass. Thank you.
Thank you. This closes the hearing on House Bill 530. So those are the bills we're going to hear today. We had a fourth one scheduled, but that was asked to be delayed. So we'll move on to executive action. No, we only had three bills scheduled. I'm sorry. We were going to have more executive actions. But before we move on to executive action, I think maybe we can take a little bit of a break and come back here for executive actions. Why don't we come back here at quarter to 10?
May I suggest 9:30?
Okay. There's been a suggestion for 9:30 if we can speed it up. But that means no lollygagging. This isn't a time to go get coffee. We'll come back here at 9:30 and do executive action on House Bills 407, 420, 441, and 442. We'll take a recess for example.
let me get my sheet here and I'll be.
We seem to have enough here, so we can move on to open executive action on the four bills we've decided to deal with. The first bill is House Bill 407, and this bill has got two amendments to it. They're both requested by Representative Fern. So Representative Fern, would you like to explain your amendments?
I was going to move the bill first and then explain it. Is that okay, Chairman?
That's acceptable. We'll do that.
Committee members, I'd like to move House Bill 407.
Thank you.
Do pass.
For do pass, yeah.
Do pass. Thank you.
Not be good to say do not pass for me, but...
Okay, is there discussion on House Bill 407? Representative Fern?
Mr. Chair, I would like to move HB 407.1.2 and plus a very minor conceptual amendment on page 5, line 22, which I would explain right away if you like.
Please do.
Members, if you move the... If you go to page 5, line 22, you will see 35%. But the bill was amended to 30%, and there was an oversight and not aligning line 22. And Ms. Moore has given me permission to do the dreaded conceptual amendment for that, since it's rather easy. So that would be included in the changes going through. We have a definition of market rent. I have moved the abatement period down to 10 years from 12 years. The exemption only applies to the improvements in excludes land value. I think I wasn't clear about that last time. Let's see what else is important. Again, references on page 5 to adopting again market rents, and that the anticipation of an option to use market rents over the 30% is really up to the local entities to define what their market rents are. And with that, I believe, and the last thing is that this could be rolled over after 10 years and the taxpayer would have to reapply and be granted a new abatement from the city commission or county commissioners, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. This is all on amendment 1.2, correct?
Yes.
Thank you.
And then, do we want to deal? We want to deal with this first.
That's what we need to do. Okay. Other discussion on amendment 407.1.2?
Question.
The question has been called. Can we do a voice vote on the amendment? It seems like we can. All in favor of amendment to House Bill 407.1.2, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
One nay?
Go ahead.
Representative Abbott votes aye by proxy.
Representative Barker votes yes. Representative Kearns votes no.
Representative Knudsen votes no by proxy.
Oh, okay.
Just a second.
I need the proxies read to me again.
Representative Barker is yes by proxy. Representative Kearns is no by proxy.
Thank you.
Representative Abbott is aye by proxy.
Representative Knudsen is no by proxy.
Mr. Chair, we have 18 ayes and 3 nays.
Okay. House, that amendment 0.1.2 passes. Representative Fern.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Once amended.
I would like to offer amendment HB HB 0407 1.3.
Okay, please explain your amendment.
Yes, I was asked if we could look at increasing the opportunities for mobile home parks, and so this abatement would be on the value of the land for the same 10-year period, using the same regressive model of starting out at 100%, moving down to zero. And it would be if a entity, if a developer wishes to build a trailer court, and the only stipulation would be that it has to be for that 10-year period. The rents have to be at market rate or below, Mr. Chair.
Okay. The discussion on the amendment. Discussion? Seeing none? Question has been called. All in favor? Can we do a voice vote? Let's do a roll call vote on this amendment. Okay. Roll call vote, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Vice Chair Welch?
Yes.
Vice Chair Thane?
Yes.
Representative Abbott?
Yes, by proxy.
Representative Barker?
Yes, by proxy.
Representative Brewster?
Yes.
Representative Buckley?
Yes.
Representative Butcher?
Yes.
Representative Konauer?
Yes.
Representative Essman?
Yes.
Representative Fern?
Yes.
Representative Kazmaier?
Yes.
Representative Kearns?
No, by proxy.
Representative R. Knudsen?
No, by proxy.
Representative Malone?
Yes.
Representative Marler?
Yes.
Representative Miner?
Yes.
Representative Niklokakos?
Yes.
Representative Romano?
Yes.
Representative T. Smith?
Yes.
Representative Vinton?
No.
Chair Fielder?
No.
Mr. Chair, we have 17 ayes and 4 nays.
Thank you. Representative Fern, would you like to continue to discuss your bill?
I'd like to move House Bill 407 do pass amended twice.
Okay. Discussion on House Bill 407 twice amended. Representative Niklokakos.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I worked with Representative Fern on this bill a little bit. We actually ran some of my properties through an earlier version of it. I think it's pretty innovative. Might need some tweaks, but looks like something that's promising. So I'll be a yes vote. Thank you.
Further discussion on House Bill 407, twice amended. Representative Malone.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'm concerned about there's no backfill for cities, counties.
Representative Fern.
Mr. Chair, Representative Malone, this is represents a tax shift. Though I don't like tax shifts, there is no budgetary implications on this, on what you referred to. It also has local control at either the county or the city level. You've got to get permission from voted in commissioners on either side. So again, it's budget neutral, and it does not affect state mills, and thus the fiscal note only reflects a request from the Department of Revenue.
Other discussion on House Bill 407, twice amended.
Question.
Question's been called. We'll do a roll call vote on this, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Vice Chair Welch?
Yes.
Vice Chair Thane?
Yes.
Representative Abbott?
Yes, by proxy.
Representative Barker?
Yes, by proxy.
Representative Brewster?
No.
Representative Buckley?
Yes.
Representative Butcher?
Yes.
Representative Konauer?
Yes.
Representative Essman?
Sorry, yes.
Representative Fern?
Yes.
Representative Kazmaier?
Yes.
Representative Kearns?
No by proxy.
Representative R. Knudsen?
No by proxy.
Representative Malone?
No.
Representative Marler?
Yes.
Representative Miner?
Yes.
Representative Niklokakos?
Yes.
Representative Romano?
Yes.
Representative T. Smith?
Yes.
Representative Vinton?
No.
Chair Fielder?
No.
Mr. Chair, we have 15 ayes and 6 nays.
House Bill 407 has passed Taxation Committee.
Good stuff.
Next bill for executive action consideration is House Bill 420. It's got one amendment to it, but we'll start with House Bill 420. Move.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 420, generally revised marijuana laws. I move to pass.
Okay. There's discussion on House Bill 420. There is an amendment. Someone wish to move the amendment?
Mr. Chair, I would move amendment 420-1-02.
Thank you. We have discussion on the amendment? Discussion?
Question.
Representative Konauer.
Mr. Chair, could we just get a description of what the amendment actually does from Ms. Moore, please?
You want here.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm trying to get it up on the screen for you here. This amendment addresses the technical notes and the fiscal note. There was some concern about how some of the terms were defined and whether they would, the exemption for the medical marijuana tax would apply at certain dispensaries. So it revises a number of definitions and add some language about marijuana. Sorry, on line page 2, line 10 there. And that's my understanding of the extent of the amendment, is to fix technical concerns.
Further discussion about the amendment?
Question.
Question's been called. We can do a voice vote on the amendment. Okay, all in favor of the amendment to House Bill 402.1.2? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, nay.
Nay.
Proxies.
Proxies.
Representative Barker votes yes by proxy. Representative Kearns votes no by proxy.
Representative Knudsen votes aye by proxy.
Representative Abbott votes aye by proxy.
Mr. Chair, we have 19 ayes and 2 nays.
Okay, the amendment has passed. Now we move back on to House Bill 420, once amended.
Mr. Chair, I move to pass House Bill 420, once amended.
Okay. We have discussion on the House Bill 420, once amended. Discussion?
Question.
Mr. Chair, I just substitute motion to table House Bill 420.
Okay, it's non-debatable. Should we do a roll call vote or a roll call vote? We can do a voice vote, possibly. Okay, all in favor of tabling House Bill 420, once amended, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Nay.
Proxies. Representative Barker votes aye by proxy. Representative Kearns votes aye by proxy.
Representative Knudsen votes aye by proxy.
Representative Abbott votes aye by proxy.
Okay, I believe that makes it 21 to nothing to table that bill. We move on to House Bill 441.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 441, Implement Report Cards for Non-Public Schools Receiving Tax Credit Scholarships. I move do pass.
Okay. Discussion on House Bill 441. There is an amendment on House Bill 441. Madam Representative Vinton.
I move to table House Bill 441.
Okay. Non-debatable motion. We do a voice vote. Yes, we can do a voice vote. All in favor of tabling House Bill 441, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, nay. Proxies?
Representative Knudsen votes aye by proxy.
Representative Barker votes aye by proxy. Representative Kearns votes aye by proxy.
Representative Abbott votes aye by proxy.
Seems like it's 21 to 0. So that House Bill 441 is tabled. That brings us now to House Bill 442.
Mr. Chair, I move do pass on House Bill 442, an act revising laws related to tax credit scholarships.
Do we have Representative Vinton?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I make a substitute motion to table House Bill 442.
Okay, non-debatable. Can we do a voice vote on this? Representative Thane says yes. So all in favor to table House Bill 442, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. Proxies?
Representative Knudsen votes aye by proxy.
Representative Barker votes aye by proxy. Representative Kearns votes aye by proxy.
Representative Abbott votes aye by proxy.
That should make it another 21 to 0. So House Bill 442 is tabled. So this pretty much brings us to the end of today's business. Tomorrow, quick looking at the board, we're going to have 5 bill hearings, and we're going to have 1 executive action.
8 o'clock, sir.
Excuse me?
8 o'clock.
We'll start at 8 o'clock and keep moving along as we can. So I thank you for a good, efficient meeting this morning, and enjoy the rest of your morning. Thank you. This concludes House Taxation Committee for today.
I didn't bring the proxy.